few miles away from the U.S. consulate in Islamabad to condemn Washington's role in supporting Israel's crimes.
Israel is brutally attacking the innocent people. Israel is brutally attacking with phosphorus bombs on the hospitals. And every day they kill 500, 600, even 1,000 children and kids and women and civilians. So there is no justification of such a genocide.
Similar rallies were held in other cities where people voiced their anger on what they call the criminal silence of the world on Israeli bombardment in Gaza that has killed thousands of men, women, and children in recent weeks.
Children have nothing to do with war or with hate. This is implantation of hate within children as well, which is a very bad thing for people in the future. I would request all the leaders of the Muslim nations to rise. This is the time. We don't have enough time. We don't have any more time to rise and become united against all this, against the evil Israel.
The protesters demanded that legal proceedings be launched against Israel in the International Court of Justice for its ongoing crimes against humanity.
It's not a war. It's a proper genocide. It's a proper ethnic cleansing. And it is being followed by war crimes, proper war crimes, which is a crime not only according to Islam, but according to Geneva Convention, according to all the rules of the world. And, you know, this is not acceptable.
The protesters also called on the people of Pakistan to boycott pro-Israeli companies and make donations to the people of Palestine.
The continuous presence of Pakistani citizens at pro-Palestine rallies indicates their steadfast commitment to the Palestinian cause and their strong objection to the actions of the U.S. and its NATO allies who are supporting Israel's deadly strikes on Gaza. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Within Iranian parliament's constant diplomatic efforts, a delegation from the National Security Committee of the Iran's parliament met with the Syrian parliament speaker, the Ba'ath Party associate secretary, and Palestinian resistance factions.
Our meeting today was held in participation of representatives from Palestinian factions and a delegation from the National Security Committee in Iran's parliament. The latest field developments in the region, specifically in Gaza, were discussed.
The Iranian delegation confirmed that supporting Palestine is a profound strategic choice, and Iran will always support the resistance, emphasizing that Gaza is fighting for the nation and humanity.
We highly value the pivotal role of the Islamic Republic of Iran and affirm that our people, who are being slaughtered in Gaza, aspire to much greater action than what the Arab countries have undertaken, as they have been either incapable to act or complicit with the Zionist entity.
This message today conveys the firm solidarity of the Iranian people and the Islamic Republic of Iran with the Palestinian people's choices in resistance and the repulsion of the brutal aggression that targets schools and hospitals and kills children. Iran is practically rejecting Israeli aggression.
Mr. Hamouda Sabbagh, Speaker of the Syrian Parliament, confirmed that Palestine will always be Syria's guiding principle and central cause. While the Palestinian faction leaders expressed gratitude for Iran and Syria for their crucial role in defeating Israel and reiterated their unwavering loyalty for the resistance front.
The legislative Iranian delegation meets with the Palestinian resistance in Damascus, sending a message to the world that the besieged people in Gaza are not alone, and they will have all necessary support to withstand and defeat the Israeli aggression. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
For the third Saturday in a row, pro-Palestine demonstrators packing the streets of central London to condemn the UK government's unequivocal support for Israel.
Our government is cheering this on and it's supporting Israel to carry on with the massacre in Gaza. So we want to try and stop that.
I'm so ashamed of our government that they are sanctioning what I think is just collective murder. And it really, really has got to stop. It's awful.
They should be listening to the protesters and demanding that there's an immediate and complete ceasefire, that humanitarian aid is allowed through.
From Madrid to Milan and beyond, even in Germany, home to one of the largest Muslim communities in the EU, where such protests have been restricted over what was described as anti-Semitism concerns.
Despite government attempts to delegitimize it, support for Palestinians is on the rise, with hundreds of thousands of people taking to the streets of central London today to raise awareness of what's happening in Gaza and to express solidarity with the Palestinians.
Public pressure seems to be working. London's Labour mayor has become the latest politician to call for a ceasefire, breaking ranks with his party's leader, Keir Starmer, who said Israel reserved the right to cut all supplies to Gaza. 250 high-ranking lawyers have written an open letter to the government urging it to stop arming Israel.
And they are paying the taxes to kill our brothers, so it's unfair. It's completely unfair.
It should stop. We want ceasefire. We want talking, negotiating, but giving Palestine what it deserves, having been bullied for 50, 60, 70 years.
As the war on Gaza rages on, there is no sign of the emotions letting up or the demands that so many here are making for their leaders to find a political solution to the crisis. Saeed Porizza, London.
On Saturday, people from across Italy flooded into the streets of central Rome to stage a new rally against Israel's ongoing carnage in the Gaza Strip. More than 20 pro-Palestine demonstrations have been staged in several Italian cities and towns since the start of the conflict on October 7. At Saturday's rally, attended by more than 20,000 people, demonstrators were saying that what Israel has been doing for decades to the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank is shameful and outrageous.
It's a war crime. Israel is killing innocent people. It has occupied a land belonging to Palestine.
President Netanyahu.
Unfortunately, Netanyahu is not alone. That's why they're not stopping the war. How many more civilians and children have to be slaughtered?
This is a genocide, and it must be said. They have to stop now.
So far, the Italian government, supported by practically all the mainstream media, has lined up with no care for the onslaught of thousands of civilians and children by Israel.
The double standard on Israel and Palestine is appalling. American imperialism and Zionism deeply influenced the media's approach on the conflict.
The crowd of people at the rally held a march towards St. John's Square, waving hundreds of Palestinian flags and chanting out loud, "Free Palestine."
The United Nations has urged Israel to put an end to its collective punishment of the entire population of the Gaza Strip. A communication blackout caused by Israel's heavy bombing has resulted in the Gaza Strip being unreachable. This makes it even more difficult to obtain information and evidence about international law violations and war crimes being committed against Palestinian civilians.
It is important that the United Nations have condemned Israel's crimes. We are saying that Western countries, including the Italian government, are not credible anymore. They are complicit in the crimes perpetrated by the fascist Netanyahu government.
Many at the rally expressed deep concern over the fate of hundreds of thousands of Palestinians as the Israeli air and ground forces are stepping up operations in the Gaza Strip. Some said that, given the circumstances, the involvement of other countries seems inevitable. Max Civili, Rome.
Hundreds of people have rallied near the Israeli embassy in downtown Seoul, demanding the Israeli military stop its attacks on Gaza residents and calling for a truce. After shedding more light on the ongoing deadly violence, including war crimes committed by Israel, a Palestinian student expressed her gratitude for the global popular support for Palestine.
Today, we affirm your solidarity with Palestine, its solidarity with the truth.
with the right people and the owners of the land, with those whom the world has forgotten for many years.
Speakers also warned of the pro-Israeli narrative dominating Western media. Meanwhile, many South Koreans are getting a grasp of the basic truths.
The fundamental problem of this violence lies in Israel's excessive blockade and repressive policy towards Gaza.
Concern among people from around the world has grown as communication with the Gaza Strip has been cut off and calls for a truce ignored by Israel and the U.S.
We need a ceasefire right now. Too many innocent people have died and it is continuing and no one is putting a stop to it. There's no one listening to us. No one is helping us. And I am for the people of Palestine. This is no longer a conflict. It is a genocide.
South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has called for a political solution and carefully sidestepped offering Israel the unconditional support it's received from Washington.
Although South Korea is an ally of the United States, what's striking is these regular demonstrations of support for Palestine. And while many of those rallying here today are students and business people from the Middle East, a broad range of participants are also Koreans who are increasingly questioning Israel's current actions, as well as Israel's overall policies toward the Palestinians. Frank Smith, Seoul.
On Saturday, more than 1 million people gathered in Atatürk Airport in Istanbul in support of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza. The rally was attended by Turkish president as well as a number of ministers and parliament members. Erdogan said the Western countries that shed crocodile tears over the death of civilians in Ukraine are not only turning a blind eye to the death of Palestinian civilians in Gaza, but also supporting it. He added that Turkey is against this double standard and hypocritical behavior. Turkish president also went on to say that the West has mobilized its politicians and media to legitimize the massacre of the innocent people of Gaza.
The main culprit behind the massacre unfolding in Gaza is the West. The massacre in Gaza is entirely the work of the West. Israel will not last even 3 days without the support of Western countries. They fully support the child killers in Gaza. Israel is now behaving like a war criminal.
Erdogan also warned that his country is preparing to reveal to the world that Israel is a war criminal.
We came here with our kids to stand with the people of Palestine, to voice our rejection to the killing of children. This is not a war. This is a genocide. Everyone knows and sees this, but they are unfortunately silent. I did not want to be silent. That's why I came here.
The rally-goers chanted slogans condemning Israeli atrocities in the Gaza Strip, calling it the genocide of the century. They called on their government to take concrete actions to end the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians.
At the concert today, of course, I canceled it. And I came here to voice my rejection to the Israel massacre against civilians and to support Palestinian people who have been witnessing a real massacre for the past 22 days. I hope that the voice of the 1 million who attended this rally would reach the 3 billion Muslims all over the world, and we can push it to stop aggression.
The rally was attended by political party leaders, politicians, and artists. Protesters from different nationalities also attended to show their support for Gaza. They voiced their anger at the Israeli war on a blockaded strip that has no electricity, water, and even internet.
I am from Gaza and my whole family is there. I have lost contact with them since yesterday. For the past 22 days, Gaza has been under attack and civilians and children are dying. The international community is silent and all we need now is a ceasefire as even hospitals are being bombed and the situation is very bad in the strip.
Following Erdogan's speech, Israeli Foreign Minister Eli Cohen ordered Israeli diplomats in Turkey to return to Israel and called for a reassessment of ties with Turkey due to what he called harsh criticism by leaders in Turkey against the military offensive on Gaza.
Just like other cities around the world, people in Istanbul are calling for an end to the Israeli aggression on Gaza. People here want their government and the international community to help stop the Israeli genocide of Palestinians. Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Paris has resumed banning pro-Palestinian demonstrations, this time in what many committed activists said was a trap laid especially for them. Just 90 minutes before the start of a highly anticipated anti-Israel march across the city, local authorities withdrew the permit. That gave police the power to abuse, fine, and arrest those who attended, and also to unfairly portray peaceful protesters as lawbreakers. Similar tactics were used to scare the average citizen from joining the Yellow Vest movement, and it makes the lack of huge protests in Europe's largest Muslim country more understandable. Marchers accused Israel of almost too many atrocities in Gaza to list. Official war crimes, the most brutal siege in modern times, on top of an already illegal 17-year blockade. The indiscriminate bombing of civilians, propagating false and easily disproven claims regarding the actions of Hamas. The murder of thousands of children, attacks on schools, hospitals, and mosques, decades of apartheid, a merciless imperialist project reminiscent of a thankfully bygone era of human history, and on and on.
A genocide.
It's a genocide. We must call a cat a cat, as we say in France. But wow, what a poor cat. Across France, people are morally devastated by what they are seeing being done to Palestine. How can these things be happening in 2023?
Many voiced contempt for already deeply unpopular President Emmanuel Macron, who has given almost unconditional support for Tel Aviv.
We don't understand the position of our president at all. How can he unconditionally support the crimes of Israel and not support Palestinian civilians? How can he support Israel when they are not respecting the most basic human rights? And then to ban our public support for Palestine shows how he's gone from very bad to intolerable.
Macron has joined Washington in openly expressing fear that if Israeli atrocities do not stop, the entire region could rally to the Palestinian cause. With three African countries expelling French troops and ambassadors this summer, anti-Western sentiment could spread very far. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
In response to a call by the Palestinian revolutionary factions, thousands of Syrians and Palestinians gathered in Jaramana refugee camp in Damascus to show their support for Gaza and the resistance front.
Today we reaffirm our right to return, determine our fate and establish our Palestinian state and our land with its capital in Al-Quds. We came today as civilians, but we confirm to the Zionist enemy that we can become fighters at any time.
Today we are sending a message to the entire world to see what is happening to our people in Palestine and the injustices they face, particularly women and children.
Protesters expressed their unwavering support for Gaza, pledging to lay down their lives in defense of Palestine and affirming that martyrdom is the only way to reclaim the right of liberating their land.
Today, amidst the challenging circumstances faced by Gaza, we observe a significant bias in Western media, which conceals the truths and events unfolding in Gaza, from Syria, a resilient nation, and from the Jarmana camp, in the heart of the capital Damascus. These people declare, "We as Palestinians and Syrians are brothers in blood and arms."
The crowds condemned the complicity of Western media in the heinous crimes committed by Israel against Palestinians and expressed their trust in the resistance media to reveal the truth.
While the Western media outlets turn a blind eye to over 2 million Palestinians trapped under daily Israeli bombing in Gaza, the Syrian people tell the world, "We believe in resistance and we will support Palestine until victory." Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio, with you every single moment.
Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee, so recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday five things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Five days passed since Israel's ethnic cleansing and unconventional war on Palestinians in Gaza. The collective punishment has claimed the lives of more than 8,500 people in Gaza, the majority of them women and children. Now, most countries endorsed a UN resolution to a ceasefire so humanitarian aid could reach the people in the totally beleaguered strip of land. Yet no truce has been established yet. Now, all locations and every living thing are considered as targets for Israeli forces. And Western leaders, whose media stretching the facts are turning a deaf ear to the voices of opposition made by their own people. Welcome to the Spotlight. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. Let me introduce our guests in this episode. Patrick Henningsen, geopolitical analyst, is joining us from Los Angeles. Also with us is Shabir Rizvi, political commentator in Chicago. Now, gentlemen, welcome to the show. Let me start with Patrick. First question I want to ask you, because the whole world is talking about it. The UN has been pushing for this since almost day one, but this is being vetoed or rejected, you know, and that's truce that is urgently needed. So tell me, on what ground is Washington refusing a ceasefire to be established in Gaza?
Very good question, and the answer is quite simply, this is on political grounds. So it's the, in terms of at the UN Security Council level, it's the language. It's the language in the draft text. The U.S. has particular problems because they want to insert political designations, i.e. the condemnation of Hamas as a terrorist group, etc. This is also very important. And also to insert the concept of Israel has a right to defend itself. Now, these two concepts are hugely problematic. And if you listen to the Russian deputy to the permanent representative of the Russian Federation, the UN, he'll say and has said publicly as well that Russia does support Palestine's right to defend itself. And they do recognize Israel as the occupier, as does multiple UN resolutions. So what the U.S. is trying to do is to try to neutralize or to try to offset international law by putting in this caveat, Israel has a right to defend itself, when in fact they actually don't. According to the UN Charter, Israel kind of forfeits that under UN Article 51, merely because Palestine's not a quote state actor, this is occupied territories. Palestinians are being occupied. Therefore, according to subsequent UN resolutions, they have the right to defend themselves, even by armed struggle in a liberation struggle mount an armed resistance. So this is the problem. The U.S. wants to interpret the international law completely differently than the rest of the world, and by doing so, giving Israel carte blanche to have a war on terror where they can basically greenlight any action to do anything they want outside of the bounds of normal behavior in the international system.
Okay. Shabir, as Patrick's saying, that the U.S. is trying to have its own interpretation of do we need any interpretation? It's there. It's clear. I mean, this is an occupying force, and Israel is just playing victim, isn't it? They are under occupation. Israel is pleading nothing, actually, in terms of its obligations under Geneva Conventions, other conventions. And this, I don't think we can even call this a war, because there are armed forces fighting each other. It's not people being targeted. Just hundreds of them perished, again, in another attack on this Jabalia refugee camp. The whole neighborhood perished.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't really think you can call it a war when one side is annihilating an entire people and the other side is just simply trying to resist for its basic human rights, for its very right to exist. And the political entity known as Israel, the Zionist entity, as I call it, has historically played victim while caring about this asymmetric warfare where they're targeting children, they're targeting hospitals, they're targeting schools. Meanwhile, as my colleague here put it, you know, the Palestinian resistance, whoever they may be, have a legal right to exist. Now, with the United States, as you know, many of our viewers know, it bends the international rules-based order, as it calls it itself, in order to fit its own political goals. And as I'm sure a lot of people are aware, the Zionist lobby has a huge influence on the American political system. It spends millions and millions of dollars, sometimes per congressional representative, to make sure that everybody follows suit with what the Zionist political line is. And so you have this bad actor, the United States, and the United States Security Council, which is basically looking to carry the Zionist line in the United Nations without Israel itself actually being a part of the UN Security Council. So you have you have a direct representative of the Zionist entity in the UN Security Council. So if you're looking for some sort of ceasefire agreement to come from the UN Security Council, it's not going to come without the United States getting in the way of it, inserting its own language on behest of the Zionist entity.
Mm-hmm. And Patrick, apart from this war, I mean, that because, you know, Hamas fighters, Palestinian fighters just proved that this is only the facade, you know, this invincible military and that kind of thing. You know, it's 25 days past and see what's been going on. And now we have, isn't Israel losing both in the war? At least it's lost this so-called grandeur of that military arm to the teeth, that we're not able to even stop Hamas, you know, from retaliating. And that came not out of vacuum, as the UN Secretary General Guterres said rightly. It's years and years and years of living under occupation, rights violations, land confiscation, land grab, and all that. So isn't Israel actually losing both in the war and also losing, you know, it's a PR war too, the hearts and minds of the people around the world?
Yeah, it's important you brought up that point, which was reiterated by UN Secretary General Guterres, which is that the action by Palestinian resistance forces on October 7th was a retaliation to so many different violations and transgressions by Israel that previous to that point. And history just didn't begin on October 7th, although that's how the Western media and Western governments and, of course, Tel Aviv want to frame it as. They want to frame it as a heinous terrorist attack, unprovoked, etc. And therefore, it justifies all of the actions that they're going to take after that. So this is an important point of how the conversation is framed. And you're right to also point out that the air of invincibility of the IDF is completely under question, as is the omnipotence of their intelligence apparatus, which is supposedly legendary. So they failed on those fronts. But here's the biggest front that they will have failed at by the time it's all said and done. The soft power complex of Israel internationally depends on the country being portrayed as a victim nation. And so they've been able to get the benefit of the doubt from so many people in the international system by virtue of this is a very powerful soft power mechanism that they wield. Okay, now that is basically gone. It's finished. What the world has seen, they cannot unsee. So Israel's, you know, the air of victimization that they're able to use to kind of, you know, justify the things that they do, the violations of international law in the name of their own security, this is all now coming into question, if not completely eviscerated over the last 3 weeks. So that, in the end, that will be perhaps their biggest loss when this is over. They may gain some military advantage in the coming days or weeks, but globally they will have lost really the one thing that gave them the last air of legitimacy that they really had in the international community, which is that they were somehow a victim nation.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Shabir, of course, things have been happening on the ground, and we have some corporate media, especially in the West, trying to stretch the facts, you know, and reflect them in a different way. They're trying to demonize Palestinian fighters as those who behead, for example, Israeli captives, which is actually not true, and there is no proof for that. And a witness was this lady who was released a few days ago, and she said that the Israeli lady that said she was treated just like a guest in a very human way. And also, Hamas leaders are stressing that this is what, even if Hamas wants it, Islam doesn't allow that. You know, it's just like nuclear weapons, that according to Islam, Iran, other countries, Muslim states cannot have nuclear weapons. And this is what people in the West, leaders in the West, not people, leaders in the West do not simply understand this. So also we have this corporate media that's trying their job, trying to make a distinction between Hamas and other Palestinians, and they want to try their best to simply put all the blame and this carnage that's happening in Gaza on Hamas rather than Zionist forces. And they simply tell them that they have the right to self-defense. What self-defense? Who's getting killed here?
Yeah, exactly. As my colleague here put it, there's something to be said about the soft power that Israel holds, especially with this victim complex. So right now, the corporate media in the West is going to hyper-focus on what we call atrocity propaganda, which is to play on the emotions of people and show them these visuals or give them these stories that just sound too insane to be true, because they are too insane to be true. They're rolling with all these different stories that I'm not going to repeat for them, but all they're trying to do is demonize Hamas while at the same time trying to equate Hamas with Palestinians. And this is kind of going to be a slow burn towards kind of, you know, just demonizing Palestinians as a whole. Is going to be an attempt to sanitize the vicious bombing campaigns carried out by the Zionist occupation in order to kind of look at these, essentially these war crimes. They are war crimes, is what we're seeing here. If you wipe out 400 people within a second, without discerning if they're civilians or not, that is a war crime. So they're trying to use this atrocity propaganda in order to sanitize their war crimes. Meanwhile, what we actually see on the ground is quite different. You have Israeli commanders actually admitting that it's a lot tougher than they expected. They're seeing heavy resistance from the Palestinian resistance every time they try to enter, you know, Gaza. They are actually admitting that they're suffering heavy losses. We're also seeing from resistance media, you know, tanks being destroyed on the Zionist side, soldiers being liquidated, so on and so forth. So essentially, the media just on the West side just wants to keep the cameras rolling on whatever atrocity propaganda the Israelis are coming up with. And sometimes they've even like released claims without backing it up with pictures. And when they do back it up with pictures, as we've seen, they've actually artificially generated these pictures, or they've heavily edited them, or they've, you know, taken them out of complete context. So what the Western media essentially is trying to do is create a boogeyman out of the Palestinians while they commit all these different types of atrocities on the Palestinian people. Mm.
Now, Patrick, let's talk about Tel Aviv's plan for doing all this. I mean, are they going to exterminate? Is this ethnic cleansing, which it seems to be? It's not a conventional war. And then what's next? They want to push the Palestinians out? They want to make 10 cities, as some people are saying, on Sinai, parts of Jordan?
Yeah, I think this has been said publicly by a number of Israeli officials, either indirectly or look at the document that was leaked this week, which outlines just that, that type of a proposal. And looks like that was done in consultation, at least it appears to be, with some members of the U.S. government, so that they must be aware of this. This is effectively what you're looking at is ethnic cleansing, but with the threat of force. In other words, if you don't vacate, then you will die. That's ethnic cleansing, which is backed up by genocide.
Patrick, they are vacating and they are dying. They told them to go to the southern parts, and they're bombarding the southern part. And even there are more people, a larger number of people, concentrating there.
And they're bombing the Rafah crossing, so not allowing aid to come in. So, like, on every single level, this is like an egregious violation of just any kind of convention, Geneva Fourth Convention, any sort of human rights agreements, any international institutions. This is the most violations you could possibly rack up in the shortest space of time. And, you know, they've waited 3 weeks for their, you know, ground offensive. But the reason they've done that is so they can conduct an arm's length bombing campaign where they don't have to, you know, put any of their troops at risk. And it's been overwhelmingly civilian casualties, deaths. Majority of those, or a large portion of those, are women and children. And openly targeting hospitals, UN shelters, UN schools, churches, mosques. Just, it's endless. I mean, the rapacious campaign here is like nothing people have ever seen play out on live television. Mm. And it's really shocking. But what's more shocking is the lack of resolution from Western countries to call for a ceasefire. It's exactly. Like they're saying, it's not a good time. This is what Israel's position is. No ceasefire now. Now is the time for war, says Benjamin Netanyahu. So when has this ever been a policy of the United States to avoid ceasefires or prevent ceasefires when you have massive war crimes occurring? Mm-hmm. This is really going to be the death knell, not just of what we're seeing, mm-hmm. The poor victims of this conflict, but of international institutions and also the credibility of the United States as an honest broker in the international system. This will be the last nail in their coffin by the end of this. This is absolutely a horrible situation for so many people.
Exactly. And Shabir, what can be done? I mean, when you have this Zionist entity that has no regard for any conventions, any norms, nothing, actually. So is it possible through, I don't know, mediation, a third party, an international organization, somebody from Mars, I don't know what other ways. How can you simply sit at a negotiating table with such a regime that, complies with nothing, has disregard for no conventions, no international law, no humanitarian law, all kinds of crimes are being committed. How could you actually be there and talk to them and try to address your differences and come to an agreement? And even if you come to an agreement in whatever way, how can you be rest assured that they will comply with that?
I think you kind of answered it. They won't comply with it. This is a regime that has been politically backed by imperialist colonial powers since its inception. And every time where, any country, any person tries to hold it accountable, they're met with smear campaigns, they're demonized. The country, like the imperialist powers, for example, like the West, like the United States, will always back it up politically, saying Israel has the right to defend itself. Well, the defending itself looked like bombing innocent kids. Does it look like bombing, UN buildings? Does it look like bombing, the Al Jazeera office, for example? No, of course not. This is a regime that you can't sit down with. And if you sit down with them, then you, by default, in my opinion, have blood on your hands. There's no negotiating with this. The only way this regime is going to learn is through force, is through the same kind of violence that it pervades, that it enforces, rather, on other people. This is an occupation regime. The only way that these occupation regimes that we've seen, these apartheid regimes that have been dealt with in the past, is through national liberation. It will be through the national liberation of the Palestinian people that this question can finally be settled, because this is a regime that will not sit at you at the table. If they do sit with you at the table, then they're going to ask you to either fall in line or be destroyed, and that's that. And so the only way to deal with this is through supporting the resistance efforts of the Palestinian people, of course. And I believe thoroughly with my heart and with just all the evidence provided before me that the only way that this regime will see justice is through the rifle of a Palestinian resistance. Mm-hmm.
Now, Patrick, as you know, what's going on in Gaza these days is nothing less than genocide. It's maybe even more. It's all kinds of crimes are being perpetrated, crimes against humanity, war crimes. So what about accountability? What's become of justice? When, how could justice be served?
Well, look, I'm going to sort of deliver the bad news, which is that I don't think there's going to be any justice served, not through any international institutions. The ICC will have a very big file which they are actively pursuing. Karim Khan said as much publicly. That includes all officials, military, political, everybody within the Israeli state, and also who might be held accountable in their own countries, which is interesting, is any Western leaders that are backing or providing material support for these war crimes, once they are determined to be war crimes, which it looks like there's plenty of evidence for that regard. So they can then be arrested, warrants can be issued in their country. Not just Israeli leaders visiting those countries, as we've seen before with Augusto Pinochet from Chile, Ariel Sharon, and Tiffany Litvi, the Likud official from Israel who cannot go to certain countries, like I believe the UK as well, because of these charges. So countries can do this locally, but the real biggest change can really only come, I think, politically. And that is, of course, there's the militarily, who knows how and when this could be settled, and at what cost to the people in this area, the region, and the world. But boycott sanctions from countries, from governments, against Israel could be very effective. And to isolate Israel financially and economically and politically from much of the world, I think it would send a very strong message that what the way this regime is acting is completely unacceptable. It's barbaric. It's medieval on so many different levels. And it's being completely backed up by U.S. power and U.S. money. That would also send a strong message to the United States as well. The U.S. does this routinely to demonize and isolate countries like Russia, Syria, Iran, for instance, North Korea. But maybe it's time that the world considers turning the tables on this to show where their moral center is, mm-hmm. where their moral and ethical center of gravity is. And I think Israel is going to provide that pretext. And you're going to see BDS, mm-hmm. I think, return with a real vigor right now.
Exactly. Shabir, do you also see eye to eye with Patrick? Because what Israel is doing in this genocide that's going on, the more it goes on, the more awakened people around the world will be, and the more they will be pushing their governments to look at the facts and what's happening, not to turn a deaf ear to the cries, the voice of opposition and protest against the Israeli brutalities against the Palestinians. And do you see a light at the end of the tunnel for Palestinians?
I absolutely do see light at the end of the tunnel for Palestinians. I agree with my colleague's solution to an extent where, they can definitely use, they kind of turn the tables on the Zionist occupation through refusing to deal with the occupation, kind of like what happened in South Africa. But I do firmly believe that it will be up to the national resistance of the Palestinians in order to truly get justice, to truly reach that light at the end of the tunnel.
Okay, thank you so much for your contribution. Patrick Henningsen, geopolitical analyst in Los Angeles. Shabir Rizvi, political commentator in Chicago. And thank you. See you next time.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio.
Political analyst Kutzai Mutosi has said Western aid is used to manipulate Africa. He said the EU gave Zimbabwe money with the aim of influencing the country's recent elections. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT wrote, financial aid given to Zimbabwe by the EU was a tool for influencing and manipulating the country's recent elections. Political analyst Kutzai Mutosi has told RT recently. Mutosi said, the aid which was given by the EU to the Zimbabwean Electoral Commission was not really in good faith. He added, they were using it to manipulate and coerce this Zimbabwean Electoral Commission so that they may achieve their own foreign policy goals. The political analyst stated no one asked them for the money. They brought it voluntarily and with the aim of trying to have some influence on the elections. When that didn't happen, they are throwing a tantrum. Zimbabwe held general elections in August to elect the president and legislators. The incumbent president, Emmerson Mnangagwa,
retained his post by defeating challenger Nelson Chamisa in elections in which allegations of irregularities emerged. The EU announced recently that it will not provide $5 million in financial support to Zimbabwe due to the country's disputed elections, which were criticized for lacking independence and transparency. Mnangagwa criticized covert actions in Africa by Western regimes during his speech at the UN General Assembly in New York recently. He also condemned the use of unilateral and illegal sanctions as a foreign policy tool, citing those imposed on Zimbabwe and Cuba. According to Press TV report, Russia has said it is against foreign interference of any type in African countries in Niger following the recent events in the Sahel state. The Kremlin said potential interference of non-regional powers such as the United States in Niger's domestic affairs was unlikely to help improve the situation. Niger's elite presidential guard seized President Mohamed Bazoum and sequestered him in the presidential palace on July 26. The Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters recently, "It is unlikely that the intervention of non-regional forces is capable of changing the situation for the better." He said, "Russians were monitoring the situation very closely. We are concerned about the tension in Niger, and we continue to favor a swift return to constitutional normality without endangering human lives." Niger's Western partners and regional allies, including former colonial power France, have imposed sweeping sanctions on the country in an effort to mount international pressure. The ousted president himself has appealed to the international community, the United States in particular, to intervene militarily and restore his presidency. According to Politico recently, French President Emmanuel Macron has announced that French troops would be withdrawn from Niger in the next couple of months in the wake of the recent events in the Western African country this summer. The military withdrawal from Niger comes after French troops were ousted from neighboring Burkina Faso and Mali amid growing anti-French sentiment across the continent and military failures in containing terrorism in the Sahel region. According to French authorities, Macron also said France would imminently withdraw its ambassador, who had been living under effective house arrest in the French embassy in the capital, Niamey. Macron said during an interview with French TV channels, "France has decided to withdraw its ambassador. In the next hours, our ambassador and several diplomats will return to France." He added, Macron also said the military cooperation between France and Niger was over, and that French troops would return before the end of the year. "In the weeks and months to come, we will consult with the putschists because we want this to be done peacefully," he said.
voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Your headlines. Iran's leader strongly condemns Israeli atrocities against Palestinians, calling for a halt to exports of oil and other essentials to the Israeli regime. Global condemnations continue pouring in over Israel's deadly attack on Jabalia refugee camp in Gaza, with the UN Rights Office describing it as a war crime. And the Yemeni army hit several targets inside of Israel, with drones saying it will continue such operations until the regime's aggression against Gaza stops.